You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Tell Ambassadors Jakar and Londo I want to see them in chambers now.
Yes, number six.
Then invite them again as firmly and as politely as you can.
Captain, either you snore or last night we had a hell of a breach in the hull.
What do I do now?
Old style, you roll over and go to bed. New style, you go out for pizza and I never see you again.
What's inside there?
One moment of perfect beauty.
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. Each week, we review an episode of the 1990s sci-fi TV classic, Babylon 5. This week, Season 2, Episode 10, Gropos. I'm Paul.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And we are the Epsilon 3.
And the synopsis, Babylon 5 plays host to 25,000 Earth Force Marines, known as Ground Pounders, led by General Richard Franklin, Stephen's father. Written by JMS and Larry DeTillo, and directed by Jim Johnson, this episode was released on February the 8th, 1995, and takes place from June the 20th to June the 23rd, 2259. And the guest stars, Paul Winfield as General Richard Franklin, David L. Crowley as Lew Welch, in his last appearance as Lew Welch.
Oh.
Well, you know, you've got Zach Allen now.
But if you're going to go, you might as well go cracking heads, as I will probably bring up later when we're discussing this episode.
Cracking eggs. Well, he had a boiled egg.
Eggs, eggs, heads, everything.
Ray Cutrona as Sergeant Major Plug.
For the name.
Yeah, they get better. Ken Forey as Private First Class Large, because he is. Morgan Hunter as Private Kleist. Marie Marshall as Private First Class Elizabeth Dodger Derman. Art Chudabala.
I was practicing.
Yes, as Private Yang. Josh Cox as Tech David Corwin. Maggie Egan as Jane, the ISN anchor. Eliza Beth Garver as Tech 2. Maueva Pryor as Tonya Wallace. And Robert Rustler as Lieutenant Warren Keffer. So, Sean, what did we think about this episode?
Well, I thought it was a pretty fun episode. It's very inconsequential to anything at all in the entire series, but it brings a bit of levity and humor that we were missing last week. It's a decent episode. The filming was well done. The laying was good. What more can I say?
Dan, what did you think of it?
All right, you mutants. I'm going to tell you about an episode of Babylon 5. And it's going to be on the Epsilon 3 podcast. Now, move in, move out.
I didn't like this one. This was not fun. I came out of the Coming of Shadows with high hopes that season 2 was going to be moving into the territory that I kind of remember Babylon 5 going into. And then this one happened. And I was like, what? Where did this come from? Why? Why are they doing this? Yeah, I don't know. Just none of the characters. I didn't care about any of them. They were all just stock characters that it seemed like they'd taken out of every war movie I've ever seen and plonked into this scene or that scene or whatever episode just because they wanted something to do that week. There were fights. They turned up and they left. That's pretty much what happened in this episode. Bye-bye, Ground Pounders.
Full Metal Jacket meets Platoon meets Babylon 5.
Yeah. Like, it was fine. Like, the characters did stuff, but I don't care. Like, we only just met them 40 minutes ago, and then we lost them at the end of the 40 minutes. It's like, nothing changed.
And that's where my memory failed me, because I thought that the character of Derman survived, came back, and went on for a couple more episodes. Now, maybe I'm confusing that with somebody else.
No, you're not actually. We do see her later in season 5 in my absolute favorite episode, Day of the Dead. Spoiler alert. But yeah, no, she doesn't really come back.
No, that's a shame. Because as we'll come back to later, she's a fantastic actress. I do like her. So, Gropos is a military slang term for ground pounders, i.e. infantry, jarheads, whatever you want to
Hoorah!
Call it.
Hoorah!
Hoorah!
Ground pounders, someone called Plug.
Yeah, large, some, yeah. A big I'm guy. Just,
yeah.
Yeah. His ying to Private Yang. yeah. It's just... It is. It's over the top military stuff, and the sergeant major is just not believable. He's not even like when you see a sergeant major who's shouting, he's like red in the face, really going for it. He's just talking loudly, not really even shouting
properly, and try not to laugh the entire time by the look of it.
Yes.
The best moment for him is right at the very end when he's getting Dodger back into line, and then he gives Garibaldi like a little wink and a nod, like, I know what's going on. But it almost looks like he's checking out Garibaldi's butt as well. So, like, was there an angle they were going to go with those characters that they didn't explore for a little bit later? I mean,
nice bite.
Yeah, exactly. I thought they were going to do that beat again. I thought that was going to be, you know, the comedy moment that Garibaldi is just irresistible to ground pounders.
That's what they're going to have to take that line out when it comes to the remake. Kind of that now. Sexism, terrible. So yeah, scene one. Let's get into the first scene. 6 ships come through the jump gate at a quiet time. Just when Ivanova's put the feet up, nothing ever happens. I like this time of night. Nothing ever happens.
No traffic, no complaints, no noise. Traitors, troublemakers, and ambassadors all tucked snugly in their little beds. I love this time of night.
There is no night in deep space, and time is a meaningless concept when you stop to think about it.
Commander, the jump gate's online. I read 6 ships.
They're Earth Force.
Mm-hmm. I'm receiving a Code 10 ultraviolet docking request.
Inform Captain Sheridan immediately and alert the Dockers Guild. There's always something.
6 ships come through with 25,000 troops.
You never jinx it.
Where are you gonna put 25,000 troops? I mean, theoretically, Babylon 5 is a full station at the best of times, overflowing in some cases in Brown Sector or the down below. But every time you see a scene, and there's a lot of scenes in this show, in this particular episode, you see the backdrop of Babylon 5, the big circular tube that is Babylon 5. Hang on, that's a big circular tube, so it's empty in the middle. So you could put them somewhere in the middle. Hover them there because there's no gravity. Or you could put them on all them green spaces that seem to be painted around the outside of the blooming inside of the ship.
They are just painted, though. They're not actually there.
It's horrible.
One big artwork just constantly going round and round.
It is. It's the only bit that lets Babylon 5 down, I feel, that the paintings that they could have produced, and they had in Star Trek 20 years before, 30 years before, they could have used better matte paintings for the inside of the Babylon 5. But all of those green spaces, that's going to be grass, right? Give them some tents, let them outside.
Yep.
No, they have to bunk them up with other people. Yeah, so I'll quickly flick through to some trivia. So the trivia is that that somebody has written here, there is no way that even a large city will be expected to accommodate 25,000 surprise guests. When armies show up, they bring their own accommodations. Even though Babylon 5 is quite large, it's also quite full. There is no way such a space station, even one that big, would be expected to handle that many more people. Even if they could find rooms for everyone, the life support system would be overstressed. That's a fair point, actually. 25,000. How many, Sean, how many people do we know how many people are on Babylon 5?
That's a 250,000 humans and aliens.
So you're
250,000.
Yeah, so an extra 10%.
Right. But weren't they already staying on their spaceships that they were traveling in? Why did they need to stay somewhere else?
That's true.
That's what I didn't understand.
Well, I suppose it'd be like if it's a ship, like in the Navy. I mean, Dan can back me up on this, I hope. When everybody is traveling and all the Marines are traveling, they're in pretty much cramped quarters and all put into small areas, maybe even on a flight deck or something too, while they're transported. Then once they get to where they're going, then they get out and billet or whatever they call it. So I'm supposing that it would be the same, although those spaceships do look pretty damn big. So maybe they are sort of cramped in, and then they are brought in here, and then they're cramped in even more. So, but yes, they could have spread them out. They could have had half in the ship and half in the station.
Those Earth 4 ships look really flimsy, so I don't think there would be that much room to even just, you know, sleep properly, let alone be anywhere else. So, you know, there is General Franklin who says, like, I don't intend for my men to sleep on transports for, you know, 7 days that we're going to be here or something like that. So, yeah, fair enough. If they're just sitting in a chair and they just get meals handed to them, they're not going to be at their best when they need to fight and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it just baffled me why there wasn't enough room, why Sheridan had sort of such a problem with 25,000, really, because even if it does push all of their resources to the limit, there is all this vast space everywhere. There are other accommodations they could make. Yeah, it was baffling why they had to move everyone in at the same time. If they're there for a couple of days, give R&R for 2 days for one lot, and then give the other half for the other 2 days. So they're still rested and they still had their time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, very strange.
But the Gropos have an operation, sudden death, to look forward to.
So on the nose, like, someone needs to be fired. Like, again, right, bringing in sort of government knowledge here. Whenever we have to do something in the government, you have to then, you know, give it a title name, a project name, or something like that. But the rule of thumb is, don't give it a name that is something to do with what the actual project is. Because obviously we are the government, we want to hold some sort of thing secret and things like that. So you don't use a name that has anything to do with what you intend to do. Certainly not cursing your own troops to sudden death by saying what they're actually going to do. You know, the person who was doing that, the admin officer who gave them sudden death, either there wasn't enough left in the copious amounts of operations that were left in his list, or he just wanted to have a laugh and he was quitting that day. So he figured, you know, give them the most on the nose thing they could possibly do. Oh, they're relief tribes for Io? Sudden death. Yeah, there we go.
Operation surprise attack.
Oh, no. But yeah, yes, they... I don't even remember what the thing was. They were giving some rebels off a planet. Or was it a rebels off a small moon?
They were trying to take Matok.
On Actor.
Yeah.
Very Star Wars.
Yeah. Those rebels, they'd have to get rid of the rebel base.
Yeah, but it wasn't easy because they kept firing their little lasers up into the air.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Those damn lasers.
They're firing lasers?
Yeah. But apparently it was a small planet that was close to the station's jump gates, which is why they came to Babylon 5. And they are offering new weapons for Babylon 5.
They could take on a warship.
Mm. But Sheridan states that Babylon 5 is neutral territory, but, you know, the galaxy is changing with the Narns and the Centauri at war. You know, so, you know, you might need a bit more to defend yourself with. Mm-hmm.
That was a perfectly good excuse, by the way, for them to move 25,000 troops. Like, we've got all of these gun emplacements. There is a Centauri-Narn war just on the horizon. We've brought 25,000 troops to this area just for the meantime. You know, we're only going to be here for a couple of days just to make sure that the area is secure, and then we're leaving. There was no need for the IO cover-up story. Like, there is a legit reason why they have brought all these weapons and why they've got troops there for a short period of time, because it's an Earth-built station. Mm-hmm. Even though it is neutral territory, they are just assessing and patrolling the area. They could have easily done that, and it would have relieved loads of problems. The 25,000 troops problem goes away as well, because, like, you could keep 10,000 circling whilst 10,000 are having off time and 10,000 doing whatever they want, and then the spare 5,000 go everywhere else to install the weapons and things. It was just baffling why they had to make up this weird... And why is it Io? They've left Earth. Io is in the solar system. It's a moon in the solar system. So why have they come out to Babylon 5 to then go back to... That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. They could have just gone to any other planet.
Yeah.
Weren't they somewhere else, though? They weren't on Earth. They were...
Did they come in?
Space?
They were coming back. They didn't start.
I think. Okay. I don't remember exactly the details.
Yeah. No, that sounds plausible. And better. But Lieutenant Keffer finds a couple of interlopers in his room. But after saying he'll get a ladder to go nose to nose with, you know, Private Large or whatever his name is, he's okay.
Yeah.
Stogie.
That's it. Yeah. Everything is A-okay. Just like this promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network.
Comic-Cons are back. Fans are ready. Hear all about it on The Con Guy Show, where we keep you up to date on all the events, the movies, the people, and the conventions that drive your passions and feed your fandom. Straight from the nerdy heart of Hollywood, California, we are proud members of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
So the general goes to see his son and quickly shows why, quickly shows that he is a speciesist, wanting the doctor to stop healing aliens and start treating humans. Heal your own. The doctor says, life is life. Respect them and stop trying to murder them.
You have a duty to the Force.
What duty? What? What, coming up with new and better ways to wipe out life? I'm a doctor. My duty is to heal.
Then heal humans. Stephen, I know you're fascinated by these alien creatures, but they're a threat to humanity. And they always will be. Help your own kind.
Life is life. Whether it's wrapped in skin, scales, or feathers. Now, if you respected these beings instead of constantly trying to murder them, you'd appreciate that.
This was the best bit of the episode for me. This is the one that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I call it tension between the Franklins.
It was tension that was better played, I thought, because you know the father-son relationship is quite a hard one. Again, I've been harking on about watching Hill Street Blues. But ironically, there's a father who's just returned and one of the policeman's fathers, and there's that tension between them. They haven't spoken for a while. When they do, they're just arguing, and it does tend to be a bit of a trope. But, I think it is a thing that, you know, as a son, you have to live up to your father's expectations and what he has wished for you all of his life. And if you don't go along with what he wants you to do, of course, there's tension there. What they have to do, obviously, is understand that you're your own person. And that we get that speech a bit later on, which I think is really good. So the general goes off in a huff. If he'd stayed any longer, he would have been a minute and a huff. The doctor has to have some grunts staying in his med lab, which he is understandably not happy about. There are three people in the beds, none of them too ill to be moved, apparently, according to Ivanova. Maybe they should have looked in his quarters. He's got a spare bed there.
An extra cot.
Exactly what I was going to say. He's got spare bed. Why is he complaining? surely he could put his own dad up and then, you know, they could have their argument all day long.
Yeah. Can you imagine it? So, well, we've got Private Large here. He can fit in it. No. I was thinking of Derman.
Over there?
Yeah, that one. The little lady over there. She's fine. I can't think of what he said to Ivanova when he was saying about... Oh, yeah. She's got nice borders. The talk that Ivanova and Franklin is great there about the awkward father... son relationship, and she had the same sort of relationship with her father, and she's saying basically you really need to speak to him before you don't see him again.
We don't talk much. Even when we do, we only end up hurting each other. Maybe it's better I just let it go, huh?
Talk to him, Stephen. Tell him what you feel, no matter how hard it is. I didn't, and I lost the chance. Don't make the same mistake.
Wait a minute, what are you saying?
Which, again, I think is a great talk, because and that relationship between those two works. They both have had problems with their fathers and their expectations of their fathers and everything. So that was, I think it's probably one of Franklin's best episodes, this, because he's got the problem, he's got people he can talk to about it, who can help him with a resolution. Sheridan does his bit for the father, and it all really makes sense. I think that part of this episode was really, really good.
There's nothing icky as well. There was no hint of that Franklin curse that seems to happen for his episodes where we sort of turn against him and he comes up on the wrong side of the argument. He was perfectly legit and perfectly made sense why he was acting that way. And the Ivanova stuff, and you know, make sure you get to say what you need to say, otherwise you won't have a chance later. Perfect. Absolutely loved it. Unfortunately, it's framed by stuff that I really didn't like.
Well, I thought that was what was really strange. Was when Ivanova and Franklin were talking, there was no background sound effect. So they were in the bar or wherever it was, the Zouklo or whatever it was, talking away there. And all you could hear in the background was people going,
It was an important scene. They had to be quiet.
Well, yeah, but there was not even a background low-level... There was none of that. And
well, they couldn't afford it because they had 25,000 extras to pay for.
Very true. That's They're true. All busy having a fight downstairs anyway. Well, so
25, you would think that like the place is full of people, you know, 25,000 people. You'd think it would actually be making a bit more noise than it was. And it's only when that sort of the, you know, when Ivanova starts talking about her father and all, and then this music comes in the background, that there's anything in the background. I found it very distracting because I was trying to listen out to what things were going on in the background. And it's all of the actors just walking past, a couple of people, you know, taking a drink and then putting it on the table and, you know, clinking glasses and things, you know, all this. It was bizarre.
I didn't even notice that.
Oh, man. I really...
Ground pounders just don't like jazz. That's what it is. Yeah. They're not going to go to that part of the Babylon 5. They want to go to the proper Zocalo. They want to go down.
You know how when you see a scene in a bar, in a club, and the lights are flashing and there's music going, and the actors are having to speak really loud because obviously it's you know, there's a lot of noise going on. And in fact, there is no noise. It's all just sound effect. And of course, it has to be quiet so the microphones can pick up their speech. This was the opposite. This was them talking with no background noise in it. So you heard everything that was going on in the background. It was bizarre. It really was. Anyway, enough of that.
How about the big fight over Delenn?
Is there something you want?
What are you?
I am Amin Bari. Now please let me pass.
Bari, huh? Amin Bari don't have hair. This is human hair.
Let go! Please. Please! I have done nothing to you.
Your people killed my people on the line, Boney. Now you parade around trying to look human. What you need is a good lesson.
She got backed into the corner because she had hair and stuff. And I had forgotten how this episode played out, and I expected her to do like a flying haya and just kick their ass.
Yeah.
Like Lanier would have done or something. But no, she was more frightened than anything.
Yeah, in fact, it would have been better if Lanier had come in and kicked some butt. But I understand for this episode and also for the story, they need to get Dermot involved. So she comes in and starts kicking. And she's pretty good at the old high kicking and punches and things. She's quite a good action character there. I thought she did quite well.
Mm-hmm.
Delenn has got accosted and Kelsey... That's not Kelsey, sorry. Why don't I call her Kelsey? Private Dermot.
I wonder.
Dodger. Yeah. Puts an end to it. Garibaldi decides not to bring charges and gets a cheeky approval from Dermot. Nice book.
Yeah, they kind of have a chat and a bonding session, so to speak.
Yeah. After the latest argument between the general and the doctor.
General, your son is one of the finest doctors I have ever served with. Well, he will bend or break every rule there is if there's a life to be saved or pain to be soothed. And he's a holy terror when his principles are challenged.
Good. A man who won't stand up for his own principles is not really a man at all.
Sheridan speaks up on Stephen's behalf, has a chat about his father's relationship with him.
Yeah, my father used to say the same thing to me. Of course, there were times when my principles and his clashed. Oh, we got mad, We argued, we fought. And finally, one day, we both realized that neither of us could be anything other than what we were. But we never stopped talking or loving each other.
The general has something to think about. Garibaldi and Dermot get together. As Lou takes over his role for him, so Lou says, "You get off and get some. I'll do your job for you." is that a good idea? Is he? I mean,
yeah, well, it, absolutely. It was a good idea until he blew it. Oh, you know, there was this woman, and this other woman, and another one. Yeah.
But I did like the callback when they're actually back at Garibaldi's, and Garibaldi then calls him because he just can't take his mind off work. He calls back to Lou, and it cuts to a scene where everyone's just going back to bed now, and they're escorting people away and they're dredging him. That was definitely an airplane moment there for me. It was people just bloodied because Lou had just gone ape on everybody. He'd gone full Magnum PI, just gone straight into him.
Yeah, so Derman and Garibaldi get together in Garibaldi's quarters, which surprisingly has nobody else in it. No other grunts, none of the 25,000 in there. He's got it to himself.
He's a ranking officer.
Yeah, true.
They're behind the camera. They were watching the whole time. That's why Garibaldi wasn't really sure about this. Moved way too fast for him.
Yeah. But basically, they get it on, as the kids say. Yeah. Derman wants to speed it up, but Garibaldi wants to slow it down. I just wish they'd make the mind up. You gotta speed it up, and then you gotta slow it down. 'Cause if you believe that a love can hit the top, you gotta play around. But soon you will find that there comes a time for making your mind.
Right, German wanted some ground pounding, and Garibaldi wasn't having any of it.
Well, we're plugging in a large yang by any chance. Right.
Ivanova and Sheridan review the defensive upgrades, pulse cannons, interceptors, mine launches, and a tracking system that's 3 times faster than their old one. Sheridan hopes they don't have to use them. The general apologizes to his son in his own way.
You have no right to call me a murderer. My God, Stephen, I'm your father. And your superior officer. Do you have so little respect for me?
It's not about respect.
Then what is it about?
Us. The way that we talk to each other. Actually, the way that we don't talk to each other.
Nonsense. I always listen to what you have to say.
Yeah, you listen, but you don't hear. And it drives me crazy sometimes, especially when...
But Stephen gives the really good... son to father speech, saying he'll always love him. And
when what?
When I don't know if I'll ever see you alive again.
Every soldier lives with death, son. But I suppose sometimes we forget that our loved ones must live with it too. But believe me, I never tried to shut you out.
Maybe that's just the way it is between fathers and sons. Or maybe just us. Either way, I've always respected you.
And his dad basically does what every dad does in his position. Shakes his hand.
Right. Not even an I love you.
No, that's it.
You gave me strength, independence, and courage. And though you may not like the way my life has turned out, I couldn't have done what I've done without you, and I owe you for that.
Stephen, you don't...
I'm not finished. Over the years, I've said a lot of things to you I shouldn't have, but I never said the one thing I should have.
But Stephen pulls him in for a hug, which, they see they both need, and he appreciates that.
I love you, Dad. I always have, and I always will. And no matter how much we argue, or we fight, or we talk, or we don't talk, nothing will ever change that.
Garibaldi and Derman get back together right before all hell breaks out in the bar. Yay, we get our saloon bar fight. You have to have one of them in every cowboy movie.
Very Trouble with Tribbles.
Second airplane moment for me as well. I was expecting the Girl Scouts to be fighting in the background the whole time. Yeah. Even when Plug came in and said, call it off, knock it off, you maggots. And they're still going at it in the background. I was hoping to see it. Have Lou just constantly battering someone. He just doesn't stop.
Lou's walking past going, pointing to his back.
That was the cut scene. That's why he's not here anymore. Zach takes over because he got stabbed in the back.
That's it. Yeah, Zach's like that, wiping the knife. Yeah. Got his job at last.
Piss off, Lou.
But the Gropos eventually get their marching orders, and Derman and Garibaldi say their goodbyes. Yeah. And news of the fighting reaches B5, and the casualty list comes in, and everybody wants to see the casualty list, and of course. Everybody we have met in this episode is dead. except for the general, of course.
I do like how calm the general was with all of that war in the background. That was amazing. It was like playing Command and Conquer back in the 90s. That was crazy. Like he's definitely obviously a general because of his calm under pressure. But Plug came in and sort of whispered something in his ear, and then they went off as if there was some other thing that was supposed to be happening or to take his tension away. But that doesn't come back. That's not a reference to something that's coming up later with the actor or.
I don't remember.
No,
we'll have to wait for next week's episode, I guess.
I guess.
Well, okay. Move on to some trivia. General Franklin is discussing a highly classified mission with random technicians working in the background. Not,
yes, he was.
Not very professional. It seems rather strange that there are only two people in charge of 25,000 troops. There are a general and one sergeant major. There should have been a lot more officers and non-coms.
Good old Frank. Give us a moment, Frank. He just walks off. Didn't even get a line. Poor actor.
Sean, are there any Star Trek connections?
As a matter of fact, there are three that I found, and I'll start with the lowest. We've got Art Rubba-Dubba-Dub Chuvadala, who played Private Yang, and he was in two episodes of Deep Space Nine. He played a valiant cadet, and he also played Lieutenant Hector Ilario. Mm. Then we've got Marie Marshall as Dodger, who, and you kind of gave this away, she played Kelsey in The Next Generation's Starship Mine Die Hard homage.
One of my favorite episodes of Star Trek, that. Yeah,
it's a good one. Oh, yes. And then, of course, we've got Mr. Paul Winfield himself, who played Richard Franklin. He played Captain Terrell in Star Trek II, but in one of my all-time favorite episodes, he played Captain Dathon in Darmok. Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. Timba, his arms wide.
Actor when the green screen failed.
That's right.
Yeah.
Darmok in the Babylon 5. Sun annoyed.
Shaka when the walls fell.
It didn't fall, it wobbled when they hit it last week.
That's true.
That's right.
So let's move on to our ratings. We have our rating system out of five for five jump gates because of Babylon 5. And IMDb score it out of 10, and they score that as 7.3, which works out as approximately 3.65 in our ratings. So, Sean, how do you rate this?
You know what? I think I liked it a lot better than you guys did. Dan kind of gave his disdain for it away early. But you know what? Even though it's an inconsequential episode, and I don't believe it has any effect on the rest of the season or the series, I thought it was a lot of fun. I'm giving it a 4.
Wow. I wasn't expecting that.
I know you weren't.
So let's see whether Dan goes higher or lower than me.
Well, you know the benchmark. You know what I've got to try and beat if I want to go really bad, and that's TKO. And it is better than TKO. It is not offensive in any way. I didn't find offense in anything that was said in the episode. So it's not getting a one.
Nice butt.
It's not getting a one. Even nice butt was, you know, that was okay. I kind of believed that Dodger would say that. That kind of makes sense for me. So it's not a one. And it's not a 2.5 because it doesn't even do the basic thing for me of being entertaining. There's nothing here. The Franklin's really pushed it up, though, and the Ivanova scene with Franklin as well pushed it up again. So I don't know. Somewhere between 1.75 and a 2. Oh, I'm going to go 1.75. I hated it. I literally I watched it once, made my notes after that one, and then just skipped through it just to make sure I hadn't missed any scenes and didn't watch it again because I just couldn't bring myself to watch it. It was, I don't know. I didn't feel anything for these characters. It's like, what's the message here? War's bad? Well, guess what? We've got an entire five seasons of a show that's all about war. I just kind of felt Lou saved it as well. Lou's scene, just you know, cracking heads and saying goodbye to Lou. Tell you what, I'm going to push it up to a 2 just because Lou's in it and it's his last episode. There we go.
It's still in your bottom the bottom 10. So we start off in the middle, you know, 2.5, and we work from there. So the ground pounders, every single scene of that is just awful. It's man speaking loudly instead of shouting and having it sounding as though he had any sort of authority. Just came in and insulted everybody because, of course, he's a sergeant major and that's what they do. They shout and insult people. Kelsey trying to get off with Garibaldi. I understand the idea of it. She wanted to, you know, Mr. Wright now, you know, rather than Mr. Wright. But none of the other stuff is just fighting and arguing and, you know, the typical you're a RAF and you're army, so therefore we don't like each other, but we get on in the end. And yeah, it was so 1950s war movie that it was just poor. So that dragged it down to about a zero. And then, fortunately, we get this father-son relationship with Franklin and his father, and it actually worked. I was thinking, oh, here comes a man from his past, and again, and we're getting all of this. But the relationship was believable. The fact that he's a general, he wouldn't be at home much, so therefore a father-son relationship would deteriorate with that sort of absence. His a good line about, you know, the army people deal with death every day, but he forgets that the family has to deal with death every day as well. His realization that, you know, that all they do is they argue every time they talk, and after the Sheridan talk, he then realizes that, you know, Franklin's a perfectly good man. He's gone his own way, and he's done it to the best of his ability, and that's exactly what he really wanted. He would have been in the army or something, but, you know, that obviously it never happens. You never really follow in your father's footsteps. So that really, that side of things, it was a really good half an episode. So that then brings it back up to 2.5, which is exactly where I am. 2.5. It's an episode. Wow. Unfortunately, it deals in extremes. So it's extremely bad and extremely good, which averages to a middle episode. If they just stuck with, you know, the Franklin bit, that probably would have been quite a good episode. But thank goodness they didn't stick with the Gropos side of things.
Well, it was ridiculous and it was inconsequential, but I loved it.
Yes. Isn't it strange? A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about this. I gave a really high episode rating for Soulmates, and you two didn't like it. And then this way around, now it's me and Dan that don't like it, and Sean's giving it high marks.
It'll go round in circles, absolutely. But yeah, we know more about these Gropos just before they die than we've ever learned about Warren. I think that was, like, I know more about their characters and their backstory, as contrived as it might be, that we don't actually know Warren, and yet we were supposed to like Warren and be on his side at the beginning when he was, like, you know, kicking up a fuss about people being in his room and all that sort of stuff. But this episode was like the guy in that fight, the second fight, who said, "Fight!" jumps onto the light and then just swings and isn't actually kicking anyone. He's just swinging on the light. He's just living his best life. He's just up there, just like, "Fight, everybody. It's all going. Could someone get a ladder, please? Hello?" And he's still up there at the end when they say, like, call in. He doesn't drop down. You don't hear a... and just someone crashes through a desk or anything. He's still up there. I don't want to see if he's still there next week.
So, it'd be funny if he was. Hello.
Hello.
Help me.
I haven't been to the toilet in 3 weeks.
Hello. Yeah. Oh, hang on. Oh. the IMDb rating of, if you convert it down to our rating, is 3.65. And our average is 2.83. So it shows that even though Sean's tried to bolster it up a bit, he hasn't really dragged it above the actual IMDb rating or anywhere close to it. So yeah, it's been an odd one, that.
Tune in next week for more controversial opinion.
Okay, so that's the end of this episode. Join us again next week when we will be discussing Season 2, Episode 11, All Alone in the Night.
That guy hanging off the light.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Oh, don't turn the lights off. Oh, it's all dark.
What, they all died on that military maneuver? Wow, I dodged a bullet there, didn't I? Whoa.
If you have any thoughts on this episode, why not send in some feedback to the epsilon3@gmail.com. That's 3 spelled T-H-R-E-E, not the number. Or you can find us on our Facebook page. Just search for the Epsilon 3.
Now, if you have any other problems, any other questions at all, just ask.
There's only one truth about war. People die.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.